Welcome to the Pictures of Lily podcast, Vintage Edition. I'm your host, Lily Moyeri. I have been a music journalist since 1992, and I interview a lot of music-related people. Originally, this podcast was about my experience behind the story, what my experience was doing the interviews, just to give you a snapshot of what it's like on the other side of the digital recorder. Since 2024, we've shifted to the Pictures of Lily podcast Vintage Edition format, where I'm sharing my experiences about specific interviews with the bonus of original audio from the artists in those interviews. These interviews pull from my 34-year archive, many of which are recorded on cassette tape. Pictures of Lily. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Pictures of Lily podcast, Vintage Edition. This is year 7, episode 109. We publish monthly with a new episode posting on the second Wednesday of each month. You can find us on every platform by going to picturesoflily.com, where you can also subscribe and follow us, and also connect to us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Pandora, Amazon, and Audible. Although it's really best to listen to the podcast straight from the source at picturesoflily.com, as it is the highest quality audio and avoids copyright restrictions. This episode is my third, and I believe my last, interview with Damon Albarn in 2002. Waking up, it's been too long, feel the warmth of a sun on my face, turn the face where I've been going wrong. This road goes on and on. Here are a few snapshots of my interview with Damon Albarn. Before we get into it, there are some back episodes of this podcast featuring Damon's original band, Blur, including two Vintage Edition episodes with my interviews with Damon from 1997 and 1999, and a classic episode talking about my 10 years of experiences with them. This interview from 2002 took place over the phone on June 26th, and it was for Damon's project, Mali Music. This was music he'd recorded in Africa when he went there on a trip supporting the UK charity Oxfam. So very different from Blur and Gorillaz. We were both on kid duty, Damon with his daughter Missy, and I was waiting for my cousins to arrive with their young boys, which they did in the middle of the interview, but they were very quiet and went straight to another room not to interrupt us. For once, both Damon and I are congenial with each other. He's on a roll. Here's the interview in its entirety.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't have very much time, so I got to just rush through this with you quickly. Let's see.
Well, I got my missus is away, so I've got my little kid.
So what did you think you could contribute when they first asked you to do this, when Oxfam first approached you?
I knew straight away that I couldn't go the route of which I don't know. Well, maybe I'm cynical, but I've always seen the kind of sort of docu charity things, you know, a bit sort of feeble, because so blatantly obvious that the celebrity is being, who's probably genuinely believes in the kind of the aid cause they're involved in, but that doesn't really understand that much about the culture they're supposed to be helping.
Right.
And I think that's the fundamental thing, which, and I've even spoken with Bob Geldof about it. Mm-hmm. And I think he understands. I think that we learn so much from Live Aid, and this is another steep learning curve that's going on at the moment, and I'm just sort of. I don't know. I wasn't really aware that it would ever even make it as a become a record, let alone talk about it around the world. But there you go.
So did you just go there and see what would happen, kind of thing?
Well, I was just fascinated to go. It was just like it'd be an adventure to go there, and so I sort of, Oxfam were great because they sort of went with all my ideas and let me go there and just hang out with musicians. I didn't really, do that much sort of related to Oxfam, but I sort of promised them that whatever happened, that it would make it, the impression that it had made after however long I was there with my DAT machines, just hanging out playing with musicians and just a little bit and everything. you know, I said, if it made a record, then of course I'd give everything that the record made to Oxfam. But it's sort of, I did make it very clear to them that I felt this would be a more successful way of getting just the idea of cross-cultural music. Mm-hmm. as a way of communicating bigger, not bigger, but sort of more kind of pressing issues, you know.
Right, yeah. Did you feel like you learned a lot, though? Do you feel like you really understand their culture now? Like you're not a false representative?
Bit, you know, as anyone who can kind of live in a country for 15 years and still feel like they've only just, you know, just starting to discover the kind of subtleties of, you know, so it's
yeah.
But I definitely found a new love of and genuine sort of joy about the whole sort of reason I was a musician, and it's kind of just fed the rest of my life since then, and you know, that's why I've got a deeper voice.
But that's nice, though. I mean, that sounds good that you
great.
Got that.
It's great. It's, as you know, in my 30s, you know, being a musician has become, you know, a fantastic way to exist. A bit sort of punishing on the work side, because I just, you know, I just got so much on all the time. But, you know, I think if you're a workaholic, the only way to kind of cure yourself is to just, you know, start to refuse to define the lines between work and pleasure.
Yeah.
And just see the two as working together in, you know, it really supporting each other.
Yeah. Because you, like, with the Gorillaz thing too, it just,
you know, I suppose in Texas they'd term it as work hard, play hard.
Oh, right. So that's what you're doing, is it?
I don't know.
Is that a Texas
term? It's not
like
that at all, because it's not like being an oil man in Texas, if you know what I mean.
Right,
but
yeah.
I don't know why I made that analogy, but it's sort of in England that, you know, that there are certain parts of England where that sort of work hard and play hard ethic is very sort of respected.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it's just a... I don't know. I have no answers. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You did give me a flashing image of you in a 10-gallon hat right that second, though, I have to tell you. A big one.
Oh, well.
And a big cigar as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Almost cigar.
But you seem to be experimenting more with different ways of making music and different kind of music sources in general, like with Gorillaz, and now with this. It's just like not restricting yourself to the usual band.
Well, the nicest thing is it's kind of all gone round circle with mm-hmm. Blur, and I think the next record that we've nearly finished now will be our most, definitely our most sort of together. Sort of like it's for me, it has such an amazing benefit on mm-hmm. the thing that actually got me into it in the first place.
Right. Yeah, because like I don't know. Sometimes it feels like there's only so far you can go in
it's
like
kind of
the conventional
it's like
format.
Rediscovering a first love.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but and you got Norman producing it, right? But we're not going to talk about Blur.
No, we've basically done the whole record ourselves.
Okay.
In Studio 13.
Mm-hmm.
But Norman and a few other people, we've sort of we've talked to about mm-hmm. Maybe just coming into the studio and just hanging out with us, sort of for a few weeks and seeing what they can bring. You know, to the table, really, but not. It's not been really produced by anyone. It's just been produced by anyone who kind of wants to at that particular moment, which sounds like a recipe for total disaster. But it's kind of, for me, you know, with my sort of rampant eclecticism,
mm-hmm.
it's the only way I can kind of stay sane.
Right.
So there you go.
Yeah.
But it's great, you know.
It also seems like, you know, how I would never forget when you were telling me that, you know, you'll go out and buy an apple, and then the next thing you know in the tabloids will say, yeah, Damon went to buy an apple to put it on top of his girlfriend's head so he can shoot an arrow through it.
Yeah.
And it seems like with these two projects, you've very much taken yourself out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, with all those
obvious things. You know, and as there is always with these things, I get unbelievable offers every day.
Yeah.
And it's just weird that you kind of disappear, really, and you refuse to really have any kind of sort of consistent profile, and then suddenly, you know, it's you're everywhere. It's odd. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is, what that says about human nature. I really don't. But it certainly raises kind of questions of do we really need a celebrity in mm-hmm. our culture? You know, I mean, would we not be a lot better mm-hmm. if we didn't have this kind of sort of obsession with celebrity? And it might sound kind of a bit contentious, but I know that you know, but I speak for a lot of Americans as well, in the sense that you know. I've been amazed at what the sort of time I've spent in Islamic countries recently. Mm-hmm. How they don't have that, and it definitely gives you a very different view on life itself.
Do you think that it? I don't know. Sometimes I think people need it though.
I know, but it's become a sickness.
Oh, right, you think it gets out of control?
Of course, like anything like that, you know, like any kind of drug. If it becomes too much, it rules your life, mm-hmm. and it's no longer what it promised you, even though that was seemed really great at the time. So, you know, I think celebrity is definitely an opiate of the masses. You know, like football is.
Every English person I've interviewed the last few weeks has always used a football analogy.
Well, you know, oh God.
Of course.
I would tell you what, I wouldn't have been in Mexico when the United States beat them in the World Cup. Not a great place to be if you're an American.
Has it already happened?
Hey?
Has that happened already?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't. None of you would know anyway.
No. I'm following when the people around me are into it. I kind of, like, I'm listening, but
yeah,
if people around me aren't.
Yeah, no, United States beat Mexico, and if you think about
that. Oh, we already did, okay.
If you think about that, you know,
I'm surprised, actually.
That's you know, Mexicans are obsessive about their football.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised.
I know, but they did. They beat them.
Wow.
You know, I mean, just extraordinary. You know,
it is.
Yeah, another thing doesn't make any sense, but you know, that's football.
Yeah.
And that's life, and that's celebrity, and you know, actually, Frank Sinatra just. Did you need to say anything else after saying that line? Oh, poor.
The other thing is that your music with Blur has always been really British-centric, although I'm getting a feeling like this album's not going to be at all. But it's kind of like you've ended up being as far away from that horrible Britpop tag as you can possibly get nowadays.
Well, and thank God, because it's all coming out really in Britain. Mm-hmm. Some people write books and make documentaries about the sort of way that the Labour government mm-hmm. in Britain sort of basically cynically used us all mm-hmm. to sort of, you know, get power. Mm-hmm. You know, we were only kind of a part of it, but you know, the fact that people are starting to write the serious books about it is mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, there must have, you know, I just feel like, you know, it lays rest for me a lot of the things that really did my head in, you know, about
really?
The country I live in during that period, and the way that, you know, I just the demonization, cultural and I don't know. Within my culture, I was demonized, you know, as a kind of, not a foreigner, but just something odd, you know, and not to be trusted. And it's sort of...
Well, I never trusted you.
It's nice to now see at least there's kind of a bit of the press in particular. We're going to readdress the balance a little bit and actually tell it a bit more like it was.
You think they are, though?
Well, wait and see. You know, hey, I'm an optimist.
Yeah, I'm not as optimistic as you are, and I am the press. But, you know, how come, why did you decide to take a melodica?
Well, I thought, I love it. Mm-hmm. It's the only instrument I feel like I, you know, have any sort of virtuosity, and I use that word very, very kind of liberally, mm-hmm. you know, because if you see me playing the melodica, it's hardly what you call virtuosity.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But I loved it, and you know, it turned out that I was the only melodica player in Mali at that time. So mm-hmm. You know, I got to play with a lot of great people and learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think they just took one look at my instrument and just thought it was you know, it didn't have to fear this white man. Come with a toy.
I was wondering whether that might have not been one of the reasons, because it's not too, It's not too identified with anything Western.
No, not at all, no. So. And I love it, you know, and I feel very happy with it. So,
yeah.
And as I was a kind of a, basically an infant in context of sort of playing with African musicians at that particular moment, it was the right thing to do.
So what do you hope to accomplish with this? With the album, I mean.
Well, the album's part of a record label that I've helped set up with Honest Johns, and I think it's just a path of that thing, which is primarily about just trying to make cross-cultural connections.
Is that what the label's going to be?
Yeah. But that is a very, very kind of vague thing, you know. And sort of, it's not world music. It's cross-cultural music.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the idea is, and hopefully it's learned, you know, a lot from a lot of the sort of excesses and mistakes that the first kind of sort of wave of people, you know, went out to try and to find some sense in the rest of the world made through overproduction and stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe mine's equally kind of a sort of pornographic. I don't know.
Pornographic?
Yeah.
What did you think was pornographic before?
Well, Sting, you know.
Oh, right, you think that was pornographic.
Well, yeah. Let's not beat around the bush.
No, why? Why do you think that?
You know, he's a sex symbol, isn't he? He's a sex
symbol. Right.
But, he always looks...
What about Peter Gabriel?
In his kind of world music
thing.
You know, God bless him. Nothing against that at all. And, you know, we... thought it was police for fans. I'm really backtracking it. anything else I can say?
So not Peter Gabriel then. You're thinking you don't want to be like Sting.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to be like Sting.
Well, what about Peter Gabriel?
Well, I mean, I like Peter Gabriel. You know,
and his
like
real world business.
I think there's some stuff they made some sort of hideous mistakes on, but you know, overall I think real world definitely set a standard which people, you know, obviously trying to sort of improve, which is fantastic, you know. And it's, the WOMAD Festival I think it's brilliant, and it's been going on for so long, you know, and that's what's even, you know, so it's obviously had a very positive effect, if directly or indirectly.
Yeah. That's good. That's all I needed to know. The piece is like tiny, and I've got enough information for a piece that would be at least three times that size.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. When are you going to be done with Blur so I can see you in person?
September.
Oh, good. But it's not coming out then, right?
Until January.
We'll wait for it.
But it's nearly finished.
Cool. Well, good luck with that. Thanks for speaking to me. Go look after your kid. I'll go look after my nephew.
Okay.
I'll speak to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Considering how messy and frankly contentious our first two interviews were, I found this exchange with Damon very pleasant to listen back to. It makes me want to talk to him again, if only to ask him if he still believes that Islamic countries don't have celebrities. I can't believe I told him I never trusted him, but it was true then, and it's still true now. It's been 24 years. I think it's time for Damon and I to have an interview reunion. I'll have to dig out the print version of this interview and share it to the Pictures of Lily newsletter. The Pictures of Lily newsletter goes out every couple of weeks, and you can subscribe to it for free. For my paid subscribers, I am posting bonus newsletters that include print-only interviews from my 34-year archive, including classic ones from the 90s with a cross-section of people from The Cure to Oasis, Blur, The Verve, Portishead, Daft Punk, Lily Allen, and more to come. For founding members, there are additional interviews with Noel Gallagher, Damon Albarn, Richard Ashcroft, and more Daft Punk. I will link the Pictures of Lily newsletter in this podcast if you'd like to subscribe to it for free. Any paid subscriptions to the Pictures of Lily newsletter go straight to supporting the production of this always free podcast. From myself and my co-producer and editor, Lauren Schroeder, thanks for listening. And if you have a chance to subscribe or follow the podcast on any of the podcast platforms, please do so and please rate and review. You can connect to us on picturesoflily.com, and from there you can choose your preferred podcast platform, or Instagram, or Facebook, or YouTube, or Pandora, or Amazon. You can also find the playlist for the podcast episodes on Spotify and YouTube. Thanks for listening. Pictures of Lily.